Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Do you have all the money you want? Do you have all the money you can really spend effectively in your organization? Does money come in sort of a steady stream or just here and there? What I'd like to talk to you about is how to try to get money to come in regularly as compared to just some here and some there. How to build a healthy funding process over a long period of time. And in my experience, to get to a steady stream of money, or even fairly steady stream of money, takes maybe 10 years. It isn't a one-year possibility, probability. It just takes a lot of time. And what it also takes is someone who knows how to ask for money and is feel comfortable asking for money. A lot of times, a president says, well, I don't feel comfortable asking for money, so I say, well, if you don't feel comfortable asking for money, you won't get much. And you say, well, I just don't feel comfortable asking for money. I say, very few people do. It's not something you just naturally feel comfortable doing. It just isn't. And when you finally figure it out, what most people have found is this, that if you feel like I'm asking for me, it's very, very uncomfortable. But if you can see that it's really trying to connect who you're asking with your ministry effectively, it becomes quite a bit easier. So you're not asking for you, you're asking for the hungry child or for the student or for the person that is in a counseling situation in your organization. When you realize you're not asking for yourself, even though that may be part of your paycheck, but what you're asking for is to help make available this service to these people, is what you're really asking for. And you get out of the feeling of I'm asking for me, it becomes a lot easier. It's never easy, but it's easier. And so what I'd like to show you is the four steps or four building blocks of a healthy, solid fundraising program. First of all, you have to have income coming in, resources, income. You have to have people out asking for money or some way asking for money, and then money coming in, people giving you money. When that money comes in, you have to have some kind of an operations block that says, when I ask for money and someone sends me 10 pounds or 100 pounds or whatever it is, that's processed properly. This is your bookkeeping, your accounting, your filing system, that you basically keep track of who gives you what and make sure the records are accurate. Then you have over here a ministry or a service. That's your ministry that's going on. That's the service you're giving people. That's what's actually happening, quote, in the field. Then the fourth block is actually feedback. Feedback, when operations forward you from bookkeeping or from your accounting system, your budget system, they give you $100 or 100 pounds to spend, then they want to make sure that we gave you $100 and you spent it the way you're supposed to. Here's the receipt. Here's the information. You've actually done it the way you said you were supposed to do it. And feedback to the person who gave you the money, look, you gave 100 pounds, we processed it properly, we spent it properly on what you said you'd like to have it spent on, and here's feedback that says you've helped make a difference, we've done what you wanted done with the money. And I'm saying anytime, Ted Engstrom, who was the executive vice president of World Vision, and he took it from $400,000 in the hole to a $350 million organization. He was the primary person that was responsible for all that fundraising. He basically said this, what you're trying to do is connect the person that's giving money with the field or the person who is getting the food, in a sense, and you're trying as an organization to remain totally invisible. The ideal fundraising is to be able to connect this person directly to the food that's being given to the hungry child and them not even know you're there. Now, you can't do that, but that's the ideal. So you're just, he said, we're like a clear tube that connects the person giving the money with the person receiving the money, and we are invisible to the process. That's ideal. Okay, with these four thoughts in mind, I would also alert you to something. You may say, well, do we have to have all four of these? How does it all fit together? And I say, the reason you need all four is because the other three will shrink to the size of the smallest box. What I mean by that is, let's say, for example, people give you 100,000 pounds and you receipt them for 100,000 pounds, but you only spend 10,000 in ministry over here. Then all you've got to report back is 10,000 pounds of ministry. And so these people who gave 100,000 will say, well, we gave you 100,000, you only spent 50 or 10, and so we're not going to give you that much anymore. And so when they gave you 10, you only need 10 people here to process that. You see, everything shrinks to the smallest box. And that's why you have to sort of pay very careful attention that all four of those boxes are developing and are functioning properly. Okay? Now let's look at, by the way, in your app, you have a sheet that shows this. Would you hold that up just a minute? The sheet looks like this. And so it'll just sort of remind you of what this is. Let's look at a couple of fine points, a couple of details, detailed thoughts in your outline there, and then we'll go to Q&A, because I'd like to spend most of our time today in Q&A to try to find out, you know, what are your specific questions about funding and see if I can give some perspective to it, okay? The first thing is profit. You may say, well, Bob, we're a nonprofit organization. I say, yes, you're a nonprofit organization legally, but you have to have profit. You have to take in more than you put out, or you'll go out of business. You can't take in 10,000 and spend 100,000 to stay in business. You have to basically take in, say, 100,000 and maybe put out 80 or 90,000, and the other is to keep your operations going, keep your rent paid, keep your salary paid, and some of those things. You have to make more money than you spend. There's an old proverb, rule of thumb says this: when your outgo exceeds your income, your upkeep will be your downfall. And it's true. When you outgo, your expenses exceed your income, your fixed expenses, when you outgo exceed your income, your upkeep will be your downfall. So you have to make profit, but it isn't do you make profit or not, it's what do you do with the profit. In a for-profit company, you buy a bigger house with it, or you will it to your children when you die. But in a nonprofit, you take whatever money's left and you build the facilities and et cetera, and whatever's there stays there to help grow the ministry or perpetuate the ministry into the future. When you die, you don't take £1 million with you. You take a box of memories and go out the door. And some people say, I don't want to do that. I want to give whatever I make to my children. Well, then start a for-profit company. But this is not what happens in a nonprofit company. But you make more than you make profit, really. Unless you're ready to try to make profit, you don't know how to run a ministry. Ted Engstrom again said, a ministry is in part a business, and a business should be in part a ministry. But he said, if you go all business or ministry, it gets you sort of not balanced the way you should be. Then a return on investment. You say, well, I've heard that term when I was in business, return on investment. I say, yes, but it's also a concept for ministry. When you do an appeal letter, say you're sending out an appeal letter, you put the letter, the envelope, the return device, and those kind of things, you put all that together, it better bring in more than it took to send it. So you're looking at what is the return on this investment. We have an investment of $2,000, say, £2,000 going out in the mail. Well, you better have it. It's ideal to have it. You want to have it so that $5,000 or $10,000 comes in. Your return on that $2,000 investment is much larger than what you put in. If you put $2,000 in and only get $1,000 back, very many times you're going to be in trouble again. So you need to see that there is a business aspect of what you're doing in running a business or running a ministry. Now the net that comes in, like the you have $2,000 go into an appeal, let's say $5,000 comes back. When that $5,000, you've got to have some to pay the rent, some to pay your staff, some to pay this or that, and still have money left over to go to the field. It's like, and when you're early in the ministry, it's hard to do that. It's hard to put money in and take money out and have that to pay your salaries and to pay the rent and to still have money left over. The larger you get, the easier that becomes. And one other thing, you think I'm always quoting Ted Engstrom, well, basically I am at a certain level. He said that longer you're in ministry, the easier it is to stay in ministry. I agree with that 100%. The first year you're in, you're trying to figure out how do all the pieces fit together, who is on our list that we can ask for money, how do we pay the rent, do we have any money left for the ministry, etc. When you're there 10 years, you've got a lot more people on the list. You know how to do it a lot better. And so the longer you're in ministry or business, the easier it is to stay there. Now, it isn't much comfort in your third year when you're barely scraping by. I realize that. It's not much comfort, but it's the truth, whether it's comfortable or not. It's reassuring that the future might be better, even though it's not comfortable when you hear it in your third year, or fourth year, or fifth year. I realize that. Now, I've talked to you about process and the fact that each of these shrink to the lowest one. Now, process is something that you may have heard of or may have been a part of in a business you were in. All businesses have profit, all ministry process. All ministries have process as well. Like a business would put in, say, crude oil, put it through a refinery process and come out with oil or gas or whatever, and then the feedback would be, we got so many gallons per gallon or whatever the feedback would need to be. So whatever business you're in or whatever ministry you're in, you have to have some kind of circling between the raw material, some kind of processing, some kind of output, and some kind of feedback. So I would encourage you, like in the worksheet there on your with that diagram, there's a worksheet behind it that basically says, what are the primary resources we've got? What are the primary operations steps we've got? What are the primary ministries we've got? And what are the primary feedback devices we've got? And it helps you begin to see how that fits together. But it'll fit together in any of your ministries, and it'll fit together in any business. So that's basically process. Now, if you can imagine for a minute an oil pipeline going from wherever it starts to 1,000 miles south of there, let's say. And you put in 1,000 gallons worth of oil, and at the other end you're supposed to get out 1,000 gallons, right? But let's say there's a 1-inch crack 500 miles down and a 5-inch crack somewhere else and a 2-inch crack somewhere else and a 1-foot crack somewhere else. You put in 1,000 gallons and you may get out 500 gallons. It just seeps oil all the way through down there. And so you don't have the conservation of the oil going in and the oil coming out. That's what happens in your ministry if you don't have certain follow-up devices. And you may get, say, 5,000 people come in onto your list, but if you don't say thank you, maybe 1,000 of them leave. Or you know, it's like that right there is a process that when you put in 1,000 people on your list, 5 years later, it'd be ideal to have that many back, you know, still there. There are a couple of things that are absolutely critical to fundraising. Number one is your list. I asked Ted Engstrom again, I said, Ted, what's the most critical thing in all of fundraising? He said, the list. He didn't even hesitate, he didn't think, he didn't do anything, he just said, the list. Because if you have three people on your list, unless they're billionaires, if you have three people on the list, you've got a certain capacity. If you have 30 people on the list, you've got a different capacity. If you have 300 on the list, it's a different. 3,000, 30,000, 300,000, 3 million. It's like as your list grows, your capacity grows. And so you want to do everything you can to get the people who care about this over here. Anyone that cares about this, you want to have them on your list. And when someone expresses an interest in it, expresses a gift, gives a gift toward it, says, hey, I'd like to keep aware of what you're doing, put me on your list, your mailing list for your newsletter down here, you're telling me what's going on. Anytime someone expresses a sincere interest in this right here, make sure they get on the list, it's listed properly, you can read the email, you can read their address, so that a lot of times we've allowed people to be on our email list, and by the time we get home, half the names, you can't read them. And so I'm saying, make sure you can read the names, you've got the names properly, so that when you send out an appeal, it goes to everyone who has expressed interest, instead of half the people who expressed interest, but you've lost them because, you know, you can't read their name. Now, let me show you something that's, I think, just helpful. Get in mind the last time you gave a sacrificial gift, personally. You could say, it was only $10, but it was a sacrifice. That's fine, $10, 10 pounds, 100 pounds, 1,000 pounds, 10,000 pounds. Whatever to you was a sacrificial gift. Everybody got one in mind? And I see your heads. I don't want you lying if you haven't ever given one, but no. Everybody got one pretty much? Okay, let me tell you three things that were true of that gift. Number one is that you knew someone personally at that organization. It wasn't some organization you'd read about in a magazine. You knew someone personally there. Number two, you had total confidence that when I give this 10,000 pounds or this 1,000 pounds, it's going to be processed properly. No one's going to embezzle it. It's not going to be a check that's sort of put in the bottom of a drawer and never used again. It's going to be processed properly. And thirdly, there is a very specific need that they had that you agreed with and you wanted to help on, right? Now, I want you to do something for me. And that is, if those three things are all true of your sacrificial gift, I'd like to raise your hand high. And then I'd like to have you look around the room. Okay, how many would say all three are true of mine? Now, look around the room. I see what I'm saying to you? Those three things are about always true of someone who is ready to give a sacrificial gift. Therefore, what I'm saying to you is, make sure that over time, you let as many people as possible meet someone in the organization. In other words, you meet as many people as you can, have your assistants meet as many as they can, have everyone on the staff meet as many people as they can, get as many names as they can, so that as many people as possible know someone in your organization. Secondly, whenever they give you a gift of 5 pounds, always come back with a receipt, always come back with a processing that lets them have confidence that you've done the right thing with their money, or they won't give you more. And a third thing is present specific needs as compared to general needs. Say, there are many hungry children out there, please give to hungry children. No, we have a home with 7 children in it, or 17 children, or 70 children, and right now this has happened, and therefore they need money. The more specific you can be in what the need is, the more people will want to respond sacrificially. Now, people will give you a token gift one way or the other. In other words, if they say, oh, we need buns for this or that, and they sort of like it. They'll give you 10 pounds or something, but they won't give you 1,000 pounds unless those three things are true. Now, the other thing you want to assume is that every gift they give is a sacrifice of some kind. Or as they could have bought something for themselves with it. Or maybe it's a widow that only, it's a widow's mite. It's Cheryl's mother was 97, and in the end, Cheryl was the executor for her estate before she passed away a couple months ago. She would give $15, to three or four ministries, but that was out of a very, very limited income. I mean, there just wasn't any money left, and she would still give the $15 a month kind of thing. I'm saying some of the money you get is for some people who could barely afford it, and they gave it to you instead of them. So you assume everyone, every gift is a sacrificial gift. But I'm saying before you get the large sacrificial gifts, those three things will be true of it. So don't forget that. And then the last is the timing on asking for money. What you want to represent is a real opportunity to make a significant difference. When they give you money, you want it so that they realize, because of that money, whatever it was, I've made a very significant contribution. Because this happened, they've been able to do something they couldn't have done without my gift. And when you thank them, you want to show them how sacrificial a gift it was. You want to say, thank you, because you gave the gift, you participated in feeding da-da-da-da-da, or you participated in this. You made your gift help make the difference in the lives of 70 children, or whatever it is that you've got to talk about. And then timing is critical. I want to have you imagine something. Let's say you're a vendor of Polish hot dogs outside the World Cup stadium. It's World Cup coming up Thursday. On Wednesday, how many Polish hot dogs do you expect to sell the day before the World Cup? Well, you'll sell some because people are in and out and getting ready. Now, how many do you expect to sell on the day of the World Cup? Now, how many hot dogs do you expect to sell the day after the World Cup? I'm saying timing is important. Timing of your appeal, that it is timed in a way that arrives when they have money. In other words, large organizations and their research have found that there are certain days of the week that if your appeal drops, arrives on that day, you'll get more money than if it arrives this day because it's closer to their paycheck. In other words, if they've got the paycheck, they'll give you more money than if it's all spent now and your appeal arrives and they haven't got any money left. They perceive they've sold it all, they've spent it all. I'm saying the timing when your appeal arrives. Now, here's another thing. Paul Eshelman was the man who started the Jesus People Project, the Jesus film. And I was having breakfast with him one morning. He said, Bob, would you like to know how I decide what my appeal should be that month? I said, sure, I'd like to know that. He said, whatever's featured in USA Today is what I talk about. He said, we've got ministry all over the world, so he said, whatever's in USA Today, if they're featuring what's happening in Russia or the Ukraine or the Argentina or wherever the focus of the population is, I talk about what's happening there. Because people's minds are already geared to what's happening there. I just tell them what we're doing there. And he said, it really works well. Now, I'll tell you one other quick story. When I was at World Vision, a man named Ed Grumman was asked to do research, to head up the research department, and they were researching the last 5 years, the giving trends, the giving patterns, what happened in this month, or where were the big responses? And it looks something like this. It looked pretty steady, and then it went, and then it went back steady again. And so they went back and took all the appeals, like for a year before that and after that, or 6 months before it and after it. And they studied and studied and studied. They looked at the appeal. They looked at the emotion of the appeal. They looked at the return envelope. They looked at the outer envelope. They looked at everything and compared, laid out these 12 months appeals. They couldn't decide what made that. They couldn't figure it out. They just couldn't figure it out because it wasn't, the envelopes weren't any different. The appeal wasn't any better. It was like they just couldn't figure it out. And then one day someone said, I wonder what was happening in the media when that happened. And they went back and looked, and that particular appeal was on, I think, the Hungry Children of Biafra or something like that. It was quite a few years ago. But what they found was that was the cover of Time Magazine. It was the feature in the Wall Street Journal. It was the feature in USA Today. I mean, everyone had featured that. So people's thinking was, oh, these poor children. I wish I could, we need to give something to them. But they didn't know where to give it. It was like they just didn't know how to respond to what they were seeing as what everyone was talking about. They didn't know what to do with it. And along comes World Vision's appeal. Boom. They said, let's give to that. And the appeal looked like that. So what Paul Eshelman was saying, basically, I want to find out what they're talking about in the news, and I want to talk about that and what the relevance of what we're doing to that, which makes sense, right? So what I would say to you is, look at what's happening on the key magazines and the newspapers, or what the media is talking about in your nation, and see if there's a possible way to tie it to the appeal you're asking about. There's any way to tie it to it. And it may not tie directly. Let's say you're talking about, hot water thermoses. And that's the feature, is how important hot water thermoses are in life, Then you say, hot water, the students in our ministry really need hot water thermoses. Could you help supply hot water thermoses to all our students? Or, basically try to tie it to whatever's happening in the news. And it may not have a direct appeal. You may say, students these days are talking a lot about hot water thermoses. And so we break into that conversation with a conversation about Christ and how, it's like, but show how whatever they're thinking about normally ties into what you're doing, and how what you're doing seems very relevant to what's happening in society. But it's just sort of timing and how it fits in and how to take advantage of this kind of a concept.